FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. The date is April 18th, 2016. Lots going on out there. One of our favorite banks, and I won't call them by their derogatory nickname, but we'll just call it Deutsche Bank for short, is in the headlines. And precious metals keep going sideways and up and then get knocked down and up again. But that's related to the Deutsche Bank story. And this is brought to you by Birch Gold Group. And they're sponsoring my show as well as John Rubino's show. John, hey, good morning. And they're also an interesting company. Before I take on any advertiser, I always do due diligence. And that means running them through Google and seeing what comes up. I mean, if you run me through Google, you'll find a lot of stuff not nice about me, dealing with my prior career. All of it's lies, I assure you. So amazingly enough, and John, I'm running Birch Gold through. I know they've been a long-term sponsor of Dollar Collapse. They've been with you for ages, but I'm doing my own due diligence. And they come up on this thing called the Ripoff Report. Now, there's two ways to be on the Ripoff Report. I only knew of one. One is they accuse you of ripping people off, and then they plaster you up there and they say horrible things about you. And the other one, John, is that they are actually approving or accrediting companies unsolicited. And what comes up at Birch Gold as an approved gold vendor, John? I could not believe it. So good choice of sponsors there. They're also A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, BBB. And that means a lot because the first thing your average ordinary consumer does when you get ripped off is you go file a complaint at the BBB, for better or for worse. With the internet, those complaints are so more powerful, so much more powerful now. They're really amazingly, they can make or break a company, John. And so go over to birchgold.com, check them out. Specialists in precious metal IRA account setups. They know what they're doing. They got some good content on there too. A lot of the guests you've heard here. So John, on that note, thank you for the hat tip to Birch Gold, birchgold.com. Greatly appreciated. They're going to be sponsoring your podcast as well. So on that note, John, as long as we're talking about gold, we should definitely be talking about Deutsche Bank, right?
Hey, Carrie. Yeah, finally somebody admitted they were manipulating the gold market. Deutsche Bank was one of the big banks that were playing games with the London Gold Fix, where a reference price for gold is set every day. And it looks like they were using advanced knowledge of where the price was going to be set to trade ahead of it and make little profits, but very frequent profits on lots of trades. Now, When gold bugs, though, talk about gold manipulation, this is not what they're referring to. They're referring to the practice of central banks lending their gold secretly to big bullion banks, quote unquote, which are basically the big commercial banks. And then those commercial banks selling the gold in the open market to depress the price. And that doesn't seem to be related to this Deutsche Bank thing, although it's going to be fun to watch Deutsche Bank implicate its co-conspirators, and there are going to be a lot of emails and texts and things that are going to come out that will be really amusing, you know. And it also allows people who have been talking about gold manipulation to point to at least some way that gold has been manipulated, when so that people say, "Oh, it's not a manipulated market," can't any longer say that. So now what gold bugs have been saying all along is that if gold isn't manipulated, it's the only market that's not manipulated. And now we see that it was. But the big manipulation is still out there, unexposed. And so hopefully this is a step in that direction. But we won't see that until probably the central banks reach the point where they start running out of gold to ship east, or the big bullion banks aren't able to buy any gold in the open market to pay back their shorts to the central banks. Anyhow, that's still in the future, and that's going to be the big deal, but this is nice to see in the short run anyhow.
Yeah, and look, it's kind of the equivalent of these high-frequency trade companies stealing a little bit from a lot of investors. Here, Deutsche Bank knows what the morning fix and the afternoon fix is going to be because they're part of that panel that fixes the prices. And then they effectively trade on that knowledge before it becomes public, if I have it right. Pretty much what they were doing.
Yeah. And it's important to understand that these banks are pretty much corrupt across the board. They have been manipulating every single market that you can think of out there lately, and mostly getting away with it. And then when they finally get caught, they pay a fine, which they consider to be a cost of doing business. You know, none of their guys go to jail. None of the guys who are doing the manipulating are named and perp walked and tried and convicted in court and sent to prison. None of that happens, even though it's actual people committing the crimes. It's not the entity of Deutsche Bank, which is stealing money from traders. You know, a corporation is just a structure in which people do stuff. Yeah. And so the people doing this stuff committed crimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, look at it this way. I view this, it's like a speeding ticket. You know, I'm a habitual speeder. I have to admit it. I've gone to therapy for it, had interventions. I can't help it because these speed limits, as a libertarian, these speed limits were put into practice to raise revenue, not to actually keep the highways safe. Interstate highways in the U.S. were designed 40, 50 years ago to safely travel at 75 miles an hour. And now cars are so much safer and handle so much better. You have so much more control, and they've cut the speed limits. So I'm a habitual speeder, and I'm willing to accept the fact that certain times I'm going to get speeding tickets, although I try to minimize it with the Waze app, W-A-Z-E, a product of Google, and a radar detector, and it's pretty effective. So same thing with these guys. They know they're not going to jail, John. They're just going to get a speeding ticket. Now, that speeding ticket going to be a couple billion dollars at times. I mean, look at Goldman Sachs. They just paid $5.1 billion for ripping off the world on mortgage-backed securities. It's just a ticket, literally. And actually, I think it has less effect than the speeding ticket, because if you acquire too many speeding tickets, you lose your license. If you acquire too many of these rip-off settlements that all these big banks have gotten, John, nothing happens.
Yeah. Two asides about speeding before we go to the banks, Gary. First, I have two young sons, so I would like the speed limit to be universally 30 miles an hour.
I know.
And second of all, you've been to therapy for speeding. Well, that's a conversation I would like us to have sometime. I want to hear those stories.
I call it the traffic court. Traffic court's therapy. Okay. You know, the cops lecture you, you're going too fast, you know, you shouldn't do that. And the judge lectures you and you promise you'll never do it again till the next time. You know, just like the banks.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, the banks just see this as a cost of doing business. This is like protection money in the mafia. You know, the banks have to pay this to the government every once in a while. But what they're really paying it to, not to the government, they're paying it to public opinion, basically. They need to at least show that the government is on the case and trying to protect us. But what the government is doing is extracting the smallest possible protection money from its bank clients in order to be able to keep on operating through business as usual. And that's what they're succeeding at. You know, a few hundred million dollars or a couple of billion dollars, that is chump change to these giant entities. You know, they exist in the world of trillions of dollars. So something in the single digit billions, that doesn't even warrant a discussion at the board meeting.
Yeah.
And so they just do it, and then they move on, and then they manipulate something else. You know, it's reasonable to assume that they go back to manipulating the same markets. You know, they don't even stop doing what they're doing. They just pay the fine, endure a little bit of publicity, and then go back to making lots of money by ripping off their customers and honest traders. And so It's possible that public opinion reaches the point where there, you know, there's a critical mass of people paying attention that politicians can get elected on a break up the big banks platform. And you're seeing that now with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, who are both talking like this. And I think they both sincerely believe it. You know, they're not just posturing to win from the left in the next election. You know, they sincerely believe that the big banks have grown to the point where they're dangerous. And obviously dangerous and obviously criminal enterprises. You know, Bernie Sanders' great line is that the business model of Wall Street is fraud. And we really are at that point. So
I didn't hear that. I turned the guy off. Yeah. Unless it's Larry David playing him, I generally don't listen to Bernie. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a big fraud factory.
And you know, that generates standing O's in his rallies. So especially young people are buying into this now. And so it's possible, you know, it's still a long shot because Hillary Clinton is not going to break up the big banks. Oh, and, you know, who knows what Donald Trump would do. But
he hates the banks. Let me tell you, he hates them. Remember, in one of his things, they were bitching about his bankruptcies. And he said, hey, the banks just lost some money. They're killers. That's what he said about them. Who cares? You know, he's anti-bank and, you know, I don't think he has enough enemies right now. He doesn't need to go out making more at the present time. But when it comes to banks, he is no fan of theirs. Believe me.
But is that just a negotiating posture going into a session where they make a deal? You know, because that would be the way somebody who has his history would normally look at it. You know, you say some really bombastic stuff before you walk into the conference room, then you sit down and you hammer out some kind of a deal. And I'm afraid that he would get rolled by Wall Street just because there are, you know, he's got the regulatory apparatus at his disposal. But the banks have tens of trillions of dollars, and they, to an extent, already own the regulatory apparatus. So I don't know. It's hard to see how anybody who's not a bomb thrower actually ends up breaking up the banks at this point, you know, because you got to win. You got to be a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren who win a landslide election, bring in their own people to run Congress, and for 6 months have enough political capital to do something huge.
No, it's not going to happen.
That's unlikely.
Not going to happen. You have regulatory capture. So you have to purge out the SEC, all of the, you know, the Fed, which you can't do, and the Treasury. So all that has to be purged. And then you're not going to do any serious reforms till the next crash.
Could you imagine, though, Kerry, if you were our new president and you went to the SEC and said, okay, let's break up the big banks, the blank stares that you would get from the guys sitting around the table. Be like, wait, no, I want to work for these big banks. I don't want to break them up. No, you know, I'm just in the late stages of my job interview.
Well, the key is to wait for the next crisis and then break them up at their most vulnerable. Okay. It could have been done in 2008-2009, you know, simply splitting them up, good bank, bad bank, and then freezing them, conservatorship, because you can't, let's face it, you want to break up the big banks. That's all well and good, but you cannot just allow them to fail, because we will have worldwide chaos. And you think things are bad now? Forget it. So it has to be an orderly, structured wind down of these banks. Split them up. Split up all their operations. You know, the bank should not have 15,000 different operating entities. Simplify them. Commercial banking. Let's go back to the good old days. Investment banking, and never the twain shall meet. And, you know, commercial bank, you know, you take deposits and you pay money out. But by the way, John, we haven't talked about the war on cash lately, but the war on cash is advancing faster than you can ever believe. Wrote an article for the newsletter this week. The final frontier is in the bank branch. They're just not going to have cash in these bank branches anymore. They're just going to have ATMs. And Wells Fargo created a new concept, the bank branch of the future. And guess what vital component is missing from that bank branch, John?
The
bank teller. If you don't have any money, what the heck do you need a teller for? And then they got these reps that walk around with portable computers, portable terminals, whatever, maybe smartphones at this point, and they will help you open an account, deposit checks if you're having problems, transfer money. But there's no tellers in the bank. So if you have no tellers in the bank, obviously there's no cash, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're left with an ATM, which has really strict limits on how much you can take out. But, you know, technology is replacing transactional people in a lot of different fields, and banking isn't an exception to that. Mm-hmm. So, and I think banks really see cash as less and less important in the scheme of things. So, yeah, you know, there's a technological aspect to this as well as a political aspect to it. And both of them really dovetail nicely to push us towards the elimination of cash from day-to-day lives. So, it's coming. And it's going to be interesting to see what kind of black market is created by this, where you have to go to extreme lengths to get cash, but people are willing to do it. Or they start using silver coins or Bitcoin or whatever in their transactions and bypass cash altogether. We'll see. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's inevitable here. They're certainly going to try. And will they pull it off? I don't know. But they are going to try. There's not a question about it. And just get ready, because it's happening. So what else we got here, John, besides our good friends at Deutsche Bank?
Oh, well, Morgan Stanley just reported brutally bad earnings this morning. Their earnings are down by, let me make sure I get this right before I say it, but it was something like 50% year over year.
Wow.
And that's, you know, for a bank whose stock is priced fairly richly still. Yeah, their earnings are down by 53%. Now, the financial sector can't go on with earnings falling at that rate. But they've got some big hits coming still beyond what they just saw, because there's a wave of defaults coming in the energy sector. And these guys are massively exposed to energy paper. Mm-hmm. And so the year ahead is going to see this drumbeat of bad numbers from the big banks. And Morgan Stanley's biggest problem this time around was trading revenue plunging. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're basically a hedge fund. And the really hedge fundy kinds of businesses that they do are their worst performers right now. So this is very, very scary for banks and for bank stocks. And it leads you to wonder what happens to their derivatives books, which is the source of the really, really big danger for these guys, because for just a couple of percentage point changes in their derivatives books, the result is magnified on their balance sheet and their income statement. You know, so see their derivatives even start to change slightly in a negative way, and they'll see some really brutal hits to their earnings, and that's yet to come. So it's going to be an interesting year for the big banks, and this could be one of those cases where the market eventually fixes monopolies.
Yeah,
and you know, we've seen that a lot in the past. Yeah. We used to worry about Microsoft taking over, or IBM, or and any big company that is now not really a risk in any way to take over, because technology and market dynamics put them in their place. Well, maybe that's happening to the big banks right now. You know, if they have another few quarters of brutally bad earnings, then they're not going to be seen as these big, powerful, market-dominating entities anymore. They're going to be more of a fighting for survival kind of sector, and we won't worry about them dominating the world anymore.
What, me worry?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you watch it, because they kind of look like they've outlived their usefulness, right? Doesn't it feel that way, that they really, there might have been a need for them at some point, and they might have played an important purpose, but now they're just totally parasitic entities that are just, in concert with the government, because let's face it, they're doing the government's bidding, right?
Yeah. Well, banking services are useful, but they're also fungible. Pretty much anybody can do what these big banks do. And they've reached the point where they operate through market manipulation and regulatory capture, as you said. And so that's how they're so big and so profitable. But what they actually do for their customers, any of 50 different entities can do. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the customers are catching on too, and going to boutiques of various kinds that don't have all all the baggage that Citigroup or JP Morgan Chase has.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing the market wise up to the fact that these big banks really don't offer anything unique. And if that's the case, then their days as trillion-dollar entities are probably over.
Yeah. And yeah, because the technology is such a game changer, and used to be that only a big bank could, do a wire transfer, for instance.
And now you do it on PayPal or Bitcoin. And
what do you need these guys for?
Yeah.
It's like, right? What do you need them for? You don't need them, is the fact of the matter. There's nothing they do, especially with paperless checks and all of this stuff that you have, John. You really don't need any these banks. They're just like outlive their usefulness. They always said, well, we need them because they can do all of these, huge loans. And it's too hard to do it. It's more efficient to have them. But yeah, they're out of control. And, it should have never, we're going through an old theme, but getting rid of Glass-Steagall and merging investment banks with insured deposits. Hey, if there was no FDIC insurance, no federal insurance of your deposits, let the banks do whatever they want. And hey, your bank blows up, it's gone. And never the twain shall meet. And we have a way of protecting the depositors, conservatorship of the bank, but the depositors are all going to take a haircut. And, call it a bail-in, whatever you like. But what we have now is just the worst of all possible systems, John.
So Kerry, history is kind of repeating when you talk about Glass-Steagall. That was put in place in response to the Great Depression. And it also came during the time of the trust busters. And so politics are pointing in that direction. And like you said earlier, maybe we need a crisis to make it possible.
Yeah,
We'll get that crisis pretty soon.
Yeah, never let a good crisis go to waste, as Rahm Emanuel would say. I'm not convinced about Lizzie Warren's sincerity on the topic. She gets a lot of money from Wall Street. And, you just can't believe her. Is she an Indian or not? I don't know. Is she a Cherokee or Comanche? She's 132nd, she says. Puts in, how do you trust to me? But evidently Massachusetts, that just makes you more qualified.
But the point is that that's what she says and people respond to it. She gets lots of votes. Yes. So now there's a political market for that kind of stuff. So whether when there's a market, you don't know whether someone's sincerely satisfying that market or just doing it to be an opportunist. But the fact that the market exists means that lots of people are going to run on that platform going forward.
Yes.
Because it wins. And so that's what changes the nature and functioning of government, when people are willing to vote people into office who are up for it, who are really going to try and make these extreme changes. So, we're starting to see that. It's not there yet because Hillary Clinton is still going to be the next president, probably. And if not her, Donald Trump.
I don't know.
And
we'll see. Yeah. One or the other. Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. One or the other, probably barring an indictment or something like that. And so we aren't completely there yet. We're not ready for Teddy Roosevelt, but we're definitely moving in that direction. So, if a mainstream guy's president next time around and Congress stays in the hands of Democrats and Republicans and nothing changes, then the next election might be the big watershed election when the bums get thrown out, and we'll see. But we're heading that way.
We see that, it's interesting, the elites doing everything they can to hold on, manipulating the system. But hey, you might be right. It's going to be interesting to find out. Anyway, check out John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Check out his podcast. It's, I think, one of the fastest growing podcasts out there. And while you're there, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Event coming up Thursday, April 21st. That's this week in Fort Lauderdale. Go to the website. On the top, you'll see Florida Event for more info. John, we will talk to you next week.
Great. Thanks, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.